Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, a special commentary on why estrogen balance is critical to men over the age of 40. From William Falloon Life Extension. Our special issues today that I will offer and then ask you to call in and share your points of view are how doctors are bought off by medical device makers by M.K. Tyler from Natural News, and then separately, a comment about a yoga, the most famous yogi in India. He's in a mass fast to death, leading thousands of people to protest corruption in his country. A little bit on that, and why we don't see anyone doing anything that shows that they're becoming uncomfortable in the United States against all the injustice we have. And also, can our DNA really influence our cells? Can we reprogram our cells based upon the words and the frequencies in the words? We're going to give you the latest from the leading scientists in Russia. Sorry that we're not video streaming, but where I'm at, that's not possible. We're filming a great deal. I'd like to thank the people who showed up in the park this morning. It was a lot of fun to run with them, but then I had a lot of work to do outside the city. The latest on health and nutrition now. A nutrient that I believe we should all be taking every day. I believe it would help prevent heart attacks and strokes. Coenzyme Q10. This is the latest on Coenzyme Q10. They're now saying it's one of the most important anti-aging supplements we can use. I'll quote this from Paula Rothstein. It says the following. Little more than 50 years ago, a remarkable discovery was made by the Madison Enzyme Institute. Coenzyme Q10 was first identified with its chemical structure officially reported in 1958. This super antioxidant has since been the subject of numerous studies, and for the most part, has exceeded the highest expectations. It is now the darling of the supplement industry. It flies off the shelves. In fact, at this time, there are only two supplements sold in greater frequency, multiple vitamins and fish oil. Part of its success is most likely due to an aging population bent on taking advantage of natural health products, best known for their pro-aging components. Not only does Coenzyme Q10 fit this need of improving metabolic function, cell protection, and improving cardiovascular health, but all signs also point to greater future ambitions in the area of neurology. Coenzyme Q10 is as complicated as its name would imply. Even though it has been the subject of thousands of research studies, we are still in the infatuation stage with a full-blown love affair potentially looming on the horizon. Now, the best way of taking Coenzyme Q10? I suggest that you take it 3 times a day. Now, it depends upon what you have. If I were counseling you and you had dementia, memory loss, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, MS, you'd be up there. You'd be up there between 2,000 and 3,000 milligrams a day. You would also be taking NADH with it because that's a catalyst. Most people don't understand that. Not all Coenzyme Q10s are equally absorbed. So the bioavailability, meaning the how much of the Q10 actually gets into the cell, is important as well. And that's why some of the junk that you see in the chain stores, You see them in the drugstores. Those are cheap for a very good reason. Because they have to use cheap ingredients, more often than not synthetic, and so that they can get a cheaper price so people think they're getting a bargain. But in this case, you really get what you pay for. So I'm suggesting for normal people, 300 milligrams a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. I believe that that would prevent just that right there, with 20 milligrams of NADH taken at the same time, I believe that would prevent 20% of all heart attacks and strokes in the United States. In fact, just today, when I was in the park early, we had to go out early because I had to run, this police officer came over, and there was a parade in the park, and they were there, and this woman said, "I just want to let you know that a year ago, I had all types of medicine in my body. My cholesterol was over 380. They couldn't get it down, even with the meds. My blood pressure was high. I was on a total of 7 medications. Then my sister suggested I listen to the program. I was listening to the program. And then I read a book of yours. I started making some changes. Well, now I'm off all meds. I'm taking," and she mentioned coenzyme Q10. And she said, "My blood pressure is normal. My cholesterol is 150. And I did it without the doctors. They didn't believe any of this stuff." She says, "So I just want to let you know that now I'm talking with some of the other people here on the force who are out of shape and overweight and got high blood pressure, and they're open to the idea." It's these little stories throughout the day that are interesting. High-fat diet during pregnancy, which most unfortunately American women eat because they're eating junk food, programs your child to become diabetic. This is published in the Journal of Physiology. That's exactly what it was saying from a University of Illinois study. Quote, "We found that exposure to a high-fat diet before birth modifies gene expression in the livers of offspring so that they're more likely to overproduce glucose, which can cause early insulin resistance and diabetes." That's Dr. Pan at the University of Illinois, professor of nutrition. Well, how easy is it to have a high-fat diet? How about 90% of the American population has a high-fat junk diet? So you really should take at least a year before you get pregnant to detoxify your body, clean it up, get all the toxins like heavy metals out, because all that will impact your pregnancy. I did a program over 2 months ago on why we should be paying attention to background radiation, not just at that time because of the Japanese nuclear meltdown, which we now know is far worse than what we were led to believe, but because it can help protect us even here. Here is the latest on that. Magnesium offers strong radiation protection. This is the latest study. And this is what they say. Quote, "In the years leading up to Chernobyl, some dairy farmers in Austria were using remineralization as part of their operations. They added rock dust to liquid manure as well as combining it with compost, thereby removing odors and greatly increasing soil biota, or bacteria. As a result, cows had twice the normal lifespans and produced much more milk. Amazingly enough, after Chernobyl, the cheeses that were remineralized, as well as the biodynamic cheeses, measured no radioactivity whatsoever. Austrians would stand in long lines in order to buy these safe, remineralized products." Unquote. Now, iodine is obviously not the only substance that we should run to in the face of increasing radiation threats. Magnesium is a vital mineral whose lack leaves us open not only to radioactive damage, but also those from heavy metals and thousands of chemicals which are commonly exposed to. Mercury and now a long list of radioactive particles are floating in the environment like invisible clouds that have spread out everywhere. They're raining down on us, damaging us now and in our future. So make sure you're getting your magnesium. I'm suggesting magnesium at about 800 milligrams a day. And tomorrow I'll be reporting on a new study that has not made it into the mainstream media, but is official, that shows virtually all the Northwest states, about seven of them, have had a 36% increase in the death of infants since the radiation leakage out of Japan. And went back for a year, and it's just this enormous spike. There's nothing else that could cause that spike except the radiation that we were told not to be concerned about, the radiation our president and everyone else said don't worry about, the radiation the EPA says we're not even going to test milk or food anymore for. Big mistake. Don't trust anything the government tells you when it comes to radiation or our nuclear programs or the safety of our nuclear 104 installations. And by the way, everything that we told you about the Japanese government lying and that the power utility in Japan lying has now been shown to be correct. They have lied nonstop. Here's something I'll bet you already knew. Depression linked to negative thoughts. This is from the University of Miami. A new study has revealed that people suffering from depression get stuck on bad thoughts, can't get out of it, start looping them around in their mind, and they can't turn their attention away from the negative. These are people who end up brooding over a fight or an argument with a friend. They can't let it go. They can't go on. It could be a year after an argument, and all they want to do is bring it up again. It could be a divorce, a loss of a parent. A majority of the population is able to pull themselves out of negative thoughts caused by these situations. Depressed people don't. This leads to major depression. Quote, they basically get stuck in a mindset where they relive what happened to them over and over and over again, always looking to blame someone else for why their life is miserable. This is in Psychological Science Today. And also, those of you who would like to have healthier blood vessels, something new here, lingonberry juice, L-I-N-O-N-G-B-E-R-R-Y. And this is a juice similar to cranberry and blackcurrant juice. It's very rich in polyphenols, and it improves and normalizes the functioning of blood vessels and can affect hypertension. This was published in the Journal of Functional Foods. And it was just in this study that 8 weeks of consuming it daily made an enormous difference in blood vessels. Quote, the present study, to the best of our knowledge, is the first to compare the effects of long-term treatment with lingonberry, cranberry, and blackcurrant juices on vascular function in a spontaneously hypertensive rat study. And then it goes into why it worked. Well, here's the idea in lay language. Think of all the people in this audience who have hypertension, high blood, diabetes, are overweight, heart disease. All of you are going to have problems with not normal blood vessel function. So if you want to make your blood vessels function better, just visualize this. Visualize a water hose. New. It's soft, it's pliable. Those are your blood vessels. Now visualize that you let that sit out in the sun for a year. It's thickened, it's inflexible, and narrowed. That's your blood vessels. And that's just that's reeking out for a heart attack or a stroke. And finally, before we go to our issues of the day, to help the men in this audience, they have to understand why it's so important to balance their hormones. Now, I've been offering people some insights, especially men, when it comes to their hormones, because so many men, when they start to lose their hormone balance, here's what happens. They end up with fatigue, muscle loss, saggy skin, loss of a libido, loss of enthusiasm, that dynamic connection with what was important, even their partner. Now, unfortunately, historically, we've said that such men are, well, they're depressed, and treat them with antidepressants. Wrong. That these men have lost their enthusiasm for life. Wrong again. This is a biochemical imbalance, and we haven't recognized it, because every one of the people I've worked with, when we rebalance their hormones, suddenly they have this whole new connection with life. They have energy they didn't have. It's not difficult, but you have to understand what's going on. Now, you also are great at risk when you don't have enough estrogen to end up with heart problems. But if you have too much estrogen, as we know with women, if a woman is overweight and stressed and eats meat, you're going to have estrogen dominance. If you have estrogen dominance, you're more likely to have breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart attack, stroke, and dementia. We now know that men with slightly elevated estrogen levels double the risk of a stroke and far higher incidences of ocular arterial disease or coronary artery disease. And we also know that you're more at risk of benign prostatic enlargement or prostate cancer when you have higher blood estrogen levels and low free testosterone levels. And insufficient estrogen, on the other hand, let's reverse that, predisposes men to osteoporosis and bone fracture. The fact that 99% of men today have no idea what their blood estrogen levels are, I've never met a doctor in the United States or a scientist, excuse me, who could tell you what their estrogen levels were. Ask. Tomorrow, just ask any men you see. I'll bet not one of them can tell you what their estrogen levels are. Now, how do you get too much estrogen? Meat. Any form of meat, and dairy, and stress, and being overweight, that will drive up estrogen levels. So we have to understand that we're going to end up having a whole epidemic in osteoporosis in men, brittle bones, because they haven't checked to see if they could be deficient. The men who have the fewest deaths in a study had serum estradiol levels between 21 and 30 pg/mL. This is that's the ideal range. So just write that down. 21 to 30. And the men in the highest group who suffered an enormous increase in deaths had low estradiol levels of 37.40 pg/mL, and the lowest estradiol group that suffered 317% increase in death rate had a serum estradiol level of under 12.90. So the dramatic increase in death in men with unbalanced estrogen, meaning estradiol levels either too high or too low, is nothing short of astounding. It uncovers a gaping hole in conventional cardiac study and cardiology in general. Later in the program, Dr. Martin Feldman is going to talk about why cardiologists are paying a little more attention today to supplements and diet than they did in the past. Now, sales of testosterone replacement drugs have surged more than 2,000% in response to studies linking low testosterone to a host of common maladies. In a recent study, 3,000 men ages 69 to 80 had their testosterone checked and estradiols checked and followed for about 4.5 years. And if a man had low testosterone, they were 65% more likely to die from all causes. And if they had low estradiol levels, they were 54% more likely to die of all causes. So those men with low estradiol and low testosterone were almost twice as likely to die, 96% increase in death, compared to men in the optimal ranges. Now, this large study of aged men corroborates prior published reports linking imbalances in testosterone and estradiol with greater incidence of degenerative diseases and death. Now, the question is, how do men naturally make estrogen? Women synthesize most of their estrogen in their ovaries and their other reproductive tissues. And since men lack these female anatomy components, they need to produce estrogen through a process involving an enzyme called aromatase that transforms testosterone into estradiol. Now, aging men sometimes have too much of this aromatase, and which causes their testosterone to convert to excess estradiol. This results in depletion of vital testosterone while spiking to a high level estradiol to unsafe ranges. And some men lack this aromatase and suffer an estrogen deficiency. Other men produce so little in endogenous testosterone that there is not enough to convert into estrogen, which causes low levels of both free testosterone and estradiol. Fortunately, no matter what the underlying cause, aging men can easily achieve optimal free testosterone and estradiol serum levels. Now, free testosterone is the unbound form that is biologically available to cell receptor sites throughout the body. Measuring free testosterone blood levels is the most accurate way of assessing your testosterone status if you're over the age, I'm going to say, of 40. And we have to understand that there's an epidemic of aging men being insufficient in free testosterone, meaning less than 15 to 20 PGs per ml of serum, when accompanied by excess estradiol over 30 PG per ml of serum. This can signal excessive aromatase enzyme activity. Now, excess aromatase robs men of their testosterone while exposing them to higher than desirable estradiol. Aromatase can be suppressed with absorbable forms of chrysine. Now write this down. This isn't good for you. This is very good for you. CHRYSIN. That's a plant flavonoid. And lignans, LIGNANS, like those extracted from the Norway spruce tree. Now, these nutrients fail to reduce estradiol adequately, then I suggest that men ask their doctor to prescribe a aromatase-inhibiting drug. But I think you can do it in the right hands with a holistic doctor. And when aromatase is properly suppressed, estradiol levels are reduced to safe levels, while free testosterone often increases. And since less testosterone is being created into estradiol. Some men might even use a testosterone cream and get a simple blood test done. It's not that expensive, but boy, it could save your life. All right? And so now you know all about the lingonberry to help you normalize your blood vessels and how to get your testosterone in balance. Now let's just take a second and share a thought with you, and then I'm going to open this up for calls, but not yet. A long time ago, I tried an experiment. This was an experiment based upon why I felt that some people have a green thumb and some don't. Now, we've all heard that. Oh, I don't have a green thumb. Plants just die around me. I was in the Institute and I was doing a study. The study was determined, can an individual, based upon their faith, transfer an energy that could heal a rat? Now, the rat has a cancer that will cause him to die in about 22 days. A whole bunch of people said yes, and they tried, but only 6 people were able to succeed. One of them was known as the chiropractor with the healing hands. He had a phenomenal reputation. His name was Dr. Morton Jacobs. In fact, he was even Robert Redford's chiropractor. And because he was always asking me for books and tapes to give Redford. In any case, Morty was a friend, and he was also my chiropractor. And when he touched you, you felt something. There was also a Dr. Dolores Krieger, head of nursing at New York University. Also, a Rabbi Abraham Wiseman, who was known in his community as a person who could do hands-on healing. A Dr. Thomas Kruth of the Seminary of St. Luke. And a doctor, or a Harry Edwards in England, who virtually headed the entire spiritual community of England. About 60 people tried and failed.
And then each one had to do their experiment six times to make sure that there was no fluke. What was interesting is during the experiment, I generally came in because I had my radio shows to do, and I was teaching at the New School of Social Research in the afternoon. I was training hard for races. I was doing health support groups in the early evening. And finally, at about 10 o'clock, when all that was done, I would go over to the Institute and start my work. And I worked until early in the morning, and generally leaving there around 4 o'clock. I'd stop off at the director's house, because he always got up at 4, and we'd talk about the night's experiments. My experiments were considered a little bizarre, simply because none of the other orthodox scientists there, they were all into chemotherapy research and drug research. And I was the weird one, so weird that they put me up on my own floor, which was good because it was an old storage room and nobody wanted to go up there. But for me, I just cleared it all out, got a dumpster, cleared it out, and made it into a wonderful laboratory. But far more unique. I didn't believe in cages, so all the rats could run free, and it would freak people out. They'd come up there, and I'd be having about 50 rats on my desk. So I built a glass wall so they could, the people, and I had about 40 chairs back there, and there were nights when at 2 in the morning there'd be 40 New Yorkers back there, including a lot of doctors and scientists, people of all walks of life, because I also did psi research. And I never talked about this. I never broadcast on the radio. I published two of the articles, but I was more interested in satisfying my own curiosity. For instance, when Patrick Flanagan was saying that in his book on pyramid healing, that that if you put razor blades in a pyramid, they would sharpen, and that milk wouldn't go bad if you put it in a pyramid and all this. We did exact replication of the pyramid in miniature style, little tiny pyramids. None of that worked for us. None of it. And so at least I had the knowledge that, okay, we tried the experiments and it didn't work. So I was doing all kinds of work and psi work, especially people who were cursed or felt they were cursed, believed they were cursed, possessed, exorcism, all forms of interesting stuff. I can't even talk about some of the stuff I did, but it was interesting. And most of the leading people in the field, the legitimate people, the Edward Graffs, the people who were PhDs in the field and looking at psi research, I was the only real lab that would be open for them to come and we'd do experiments. So now all this is going on at the same time. So during the day, people would come to do their healing of the animals. And while they were healing the animals, during a one-week period, virtually every day someone was getting sick, and they couldn't come in. So I had no lab technicians to sit and monitor it. See, the idea was you couldn't let any of the people actually touch the animals, because what if they took your animal and, through sleight of hand, gave them an animal that was, you know, you've got to have it legitimate. So one day I was told, a note on my desk, no lab technician tomorrow, could you handle it? I said, okay. So I came in early. And this woman came in, very, very nice woman. I looked at her background, looked at her resume, very nice resume. So I gave her the animal and the mouse, and she was sitting there. And I mean, within 2 minutes, I could feel this pulsing in my head. Now, I'm a sensitive, so I pick up on all energy. And I looked at her, and I said, what are you thinking? Tell me now what you're thinking. And she says, I'm thinking about the suffering of this animal. I said, and how are you thinking about the suffering of this animal? And she said, well, I'm doing all I can to stop the suffering of the animal. She thought that she was helping the animal get well. Every one of her animals had died in the last week. But all of the attendants who had been sitting with her got sick. This is not coincidence. So then I did a separate series of studies with her. I brought in some people who were depressed. And I explained, these are depressed people. One of my friends was a leading psychiatrist in New York City. And I said, nothing has helped these people. No meds, no psychotherapy. Maybe your energy work could help. And she started to do her energy work, and once again, everyone who was in the room suddenly felt their energy just draining out of them. And the depressed people felt worse. So then I said, I have enough. I've proven my point. This woman wanting something to stop actually was taking the energy out of it. She wasn't aware of that. That's not what she wanted, but that was the result. And I'm trying to think, how many people did this woman hurt by draining energy? Now let's jump ahead. I did a whole lot of research on energy transfer after that. And one of the things I did is I took a ficus plant. I put it in a room, and it was a lead-based room, and I gave 10 different individuals a number, and then if you opened up the number, each one would say, go in and sing to the plant, another go in and spritz it with water, and another would go in and massage the leaves very gently, but one of those 10 said, go in there and scream at the plant and shake it. That was done, but no one was there except one observer outside to write down the numbers. So this experiment went on for a week, and then we waited a week, and then we changed the numbers around. You picked a number out of a box. Same thing. 10 people went in. 9 of them were very nice to the plant. The 10th shook the plant and screamed at it. We did it one more time. Waited a week and went back in. Here's what happened. We then hooked up. I got an EEG machine, and we hooked it up. Each person then walked in the room. Every single time, one of the people who had yelled at the plant walked in the room, it went off the chart. The plant was recognizing the person, and that the person was a threat. But all the rest, nothing moved it. Well, that was all the evidence I needed. I had independently confirmed, and to my knowledge, the first time in science, I believe, I did about 80 original first experiments in science. And a lot of times, unfortunately, I didn't publish it. I just didn't care. I was more interested in just doing the work. But it showed me that the energy that you project has power, not just to influence things, but now we know influence the DNA. Listen to this. This is from the leading geneticist DNA expert in Russia. Quote, the human DNA is a biological internet and superior in many aspects to the artificial one. The latest Russian scientific research directly or indirectly explains phenomena such as clairvoyance, intuition, spontaneous and remote acts of healing, self-healing, affirmation techniques, unusual lights, auras around people, namely spiritual masters, and mind's influence on weather patterns and much more. In addition, there is evidence of a whole new type of medicine in which DNA can be influenced and reprogrammed by words and frequencies without cutting out and replacing single genes. Only 10% of our DNA is being used for building protein. It is this subset of DNA that is of interest to Western researchers and is being examined and categorized. The other 90% are considered junk DNA. The Russian researchers, however, convinced that nature was not dumb, joined linguists and geneticists in a venture to explore those 90% of junk DNA. Their results, findings and conclusions are simply revolutionary. According to them, our DNA is not only responsible for the construction of our body, but also serves as data storage and in communication. The Russian linguists found that the genetic code, especially in the apparent useless 90%, follows the same rules as all of our human languages. To this end, they compared the rules of syntax. By the way, that's the way in which words are put together to form phrases and sentences, and semantics, that's the study of the meaning in language forms, and the basic rules of grammar. They found that the alkalines of our DNA follow a regular grammar and do have set rules, just like our languages. So human languages did not appear coincidentally, but are a reflection of our inherent DNA. The Russian biophysicist, molecular biologist, Gargiev and his colleagues also explored the vibrational behavior of the DNA. So that's what they're saying here is this in lay language. Your DNA can influence and reprogram your cells by the words and frequency within the words. Now, what does that mean in lay language? Well, let's just use a couple examples. The healer's thoughts about ending suffering cause the mice to die and everyone to be drained of their energy. But look at Norman Cousins. Do you remember Norman Cousins? Very famous person who got a very debilitating disease. Medicine said there was nothing they could do for it. And he began to watch comedies, old Marx Brothers and W.C. Fields and I Love Lucy, and he was laughing. And he found that just laughter was able to change his behavior. There was a Dr. Alan Putterman, who was a friend of mine, a leading psychiatrist, who was influenced by this. And we had, I can't tell you how many times I met with Marty Shepard and Dr. Carmi Arari, some of the leading psychotherapists, psychoanalysts, psychologists in America. We would have these wonderful conversations because I believed that psychoanalysis was not working. It was only part of the equation. Vibrational medicine was what was needed. I didn't believe that pounding a pillow with your fists and screaming to get something out was going to make a difference. I don't believe that the 12-step programs are working for the vast majority of people, because the moment you stand up, now see where I'm going with this, you stand up and say, I'm Bob, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, hi Bob. Bob, so good you're here. Is this the fifth time today? Yes, it is. And I've been dry for a year only because I'm here. Now, when I stopped coming 3 years ago, I went right back out and drank again. And then I came back here a year and a half ago, and then I stopped, and I went back to drinking. So I'm okay as long as I'm in this group. So this group works. No, Bob, it doesn't work. It doesn't. The groups... The language, I am an alcoholic, you're not. But the moment you say it, you've just given a vibration and an energy to your DNA. You get it now? Hello, 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 am I getting through to people? These 12-step programs with the best of intent don't work for the vast majority of people. Because the moment you're asking someone to acknowledge what they are, then that's what they become. Instead of simply saying, my name's Bob. I made some mistakes. One of them was I thought I could find through the bliss of alcohol or a drug or marijuana a better state of being, and it didn't work. I hurt myself and my loved ones. And I've learned my lesson from that, and I'm willing to find the power of the moment. I'm willing to live and find meaning and purpose in this moment. I don't need those artificial highs to find joy and happiness. But unfortunately, that's not what all these programs are. They're militantly defiant of this. You must acknowledge your sin. You must be honest. They have so much limitation. And yet you can't talk with them. It's like talking with a robot. Because as long as they're not drinking, then it must work. Well, no. If it worked, you'd go and get inspiration, motivation, and you wouldn't go back. Well, you do that, and now suddenly you can't exist without them. Oh, God, it's 7 o'clock. I got to get that meeting. If I don't get the meeting, I'm going to hurt someone. I'm going to hurt someone bad. Well, what will happen to the meeting? I won't hurt anyone at the meeting. Okay, but then after the meeting, you begin to want to hurt someone again. Then that meeting is supposed to what? Take away the anger, transform it, change it. So now, put a few things together. Think of all the people who are walking around angry. What's your fault? You know, you're why? You know what you said? You know what you did? Yeah, get over it. I can't. Why not? Why can't you just get over it? Be happy for today. Because I've mastered the art of being a victim. I don't know how not to be a victim. My conversations with other victims. We talk about what it is to be a victim. I'm a somebody and victim. I don't know what the hell I'd be if I just had to get up in the morning happy, responsible for myself. Gee whiz. You know, that doesn't feel good. So you realize when you keep repeating what's wrong with everyone else and what's wrong with the world, why nothing's your fault, you realize that that's telling your DNA to be sick. Do you ever notice how many depressed people are also physically sick, out of shape, right? And these are the people that, if they try growing a plant, would kill the plant. These are the people that, oh wow, put them around children, man, are you going to have a problem with that child. Put them in a relationship, uh-oh. Remember, it's the energy they're sharing, not just the words. But the words have a vibration, and the vibration of the word is disempowering. And it is creating a pathological vibration. So be very careful about the people you have in your life. Be very aware that what a person says to you and how they say it. And be aware of the people who just can't let something go, who feel like a victim and you're the cause, and they just have to keep reminding you. Look at the people who want to manipulate you by creating guilt and shame in you. All of that is impacting your DNA. Why do you think then that virtually every single major study shows that those people who are unhappy with themselves live shorter lives, and generally so do their spouses, because that's the energy they're sharing? Whereas people are happy with life and sharing that happiness and able to let stuff go, learn this lesson, let it go, they're different altogether. I don't have time now, but in the near future, I'm going to bring maybe 100 people that I've helped get off drugs and alcohol and addictive behavior who've never once, I say, I'm only going to be with you once. Now, mind you, this isn't 5 times a day I got to get to this meeting or I'm going to die. This is one meeting. I only counsel people once. You get that? I don't care if you're near death's door. All that you're going to need, I'm going to give you once. Because if you don't get it, giving it 16 more meetings isn't going to make a difference. So you have to prepare your mind. Just like the other day with our beginning health support group, it was packed. And I said to the people, I gave them a 2.5-hour lecture. Not once did I mention nutrition, exercise, or stress management. And I said, what good would it do if I gave you all the perfect diet, the exercise, and stress-related exercises to do? If you haven't questioned the deficiencies in your own belief system, you're not going to follow it. So now what happens is, the first time a person runs in to a crisis in their life, they immediately revert back to those tapes. And what's those tapes? The DNA, the vibration, and everything that ever happened, even if it happened 30 years ago when someone criticized you for making changes in your life or even wanting to make a change in your life. I really want to be a somebody. Do you? Well, we don't want you to be a somebody. We want you part of our tribe, our cult, our ritualized group here. So you stay in your place. And now that's locked in your DNA. So now someone comes along and says, okay, let's not change the easy part. Let's change the hard part. Your homework, before you come back, and you cannot get back in this class, cannot continue in 2 weeks Saturday, unless you have shown me what in your belief systems doesn't work, how it's impacted you, and are you really surrender it to give it up. Then if you're changing at the foundational level, anything else that could help you, you're more likely to use. That's one of the reasons I've had success, is because I always start with the idea of close that book of life. It's just a myth, bunch of lies, but you've mastered telling everyone, it's my turn, we're in the group, okay, I'm Sarah, and oh wow, I'm going to cry. Go ahead, Sarah, it's all right, we'll cry with you. But hold on, Sarah, didn't you tell us this last week and the week four and the week four and week four? And week? I did, but it's my story, and I keep coming back to it. Well, Sarah, what good is it going to do to keep reciting the myth of your story? Why don't you start all over again? How can I? I can't resolve this. No, this whole notion of bringing closure to something is nonsense. It's one of this psychobabble. There is no bringing closure to anything. All there is being aware of the impact of anything that we've ever experienced in our lives upon how we feel and our actions today. That awareness allows us to understand that in this moment, you can be a pimp, or you can be a politician. That's a bad analogy because they're both the same. You could be a pimp, or you could be a philosopher. They're both present. The energy is both. Which you choose determines your character development, your spiritual values, and your interdisciplinary skills. But we always have our opposite always present. We can be kind or unkind, honest or dishonest. We can be manipulative or not. But this whole idea that, oh, that person's perfect, no, they're not. They can be anything they want to be. And that person's all bad, no, they're not. They could be anything they want to be. It's about choices. But our story tells us we don't have a choice. You know, we're a victim of circumstances. If you only knew what it was like. Yeah? Well, is anyone victimizing you now, in this moment? No. Well, why don't you say, I'm happy for this moment. Okay. But I'd rather talk about when I was victimized and bring it up again. Why? Do you want us to experience that pain with you? Because you realize when you share something like that, everyone's experiencing the vibration of that. So we're all going to be a part of your pain, then you're part of our pain, then everybody's just one big ball of pain, one big ball of conflict at the emotional level. So why make it complicated? Let's just go to the simple solution. Just stop the behavior that is destructive, stop the thoughts that are destructive, and start putting words in your mind, words in your mouth, energy into the air that you like the outcome. Happiness? Think happy thoughts. Want people to like you? Be likable. You know the problem is when you deceive yourself, it's all an illusion, it's your story. Or it's someone else's story that you're living as if it's your own. Why don't we just live authentically, honestly, positively, constructively? Think about your words and what they can mean to you and others. If they're positive, then you're sending a right vibration. If they're negative, wrong vibration. It's that simple. Let's not make it more complicated than what it is. It's that simple. I'm Gary Knoll. Your turn. The forum is yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And standing behind that is Dr. Martin Feldman, who's going to bring us up to date on cardiology, holistic cardiology. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Someday, some way, you'll realize that you've been blind. Yes, darling, you're going to need me again. It's just a matter of time.
Like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Now, we're going to go to Dr. Feldman. I'll try to squeeze a call or two in if you wish to call in and share your points of view. Otherwise, we're going to talk about holistic cardiology. This is the marriage test. True story. True story. This is from Bob. I was happy. My girlfriend and I had been dating for over a year, and so we decided to get married. My parents helped us in every way. My friends encouraged me and my girlfriend. She was a dream. There was only one thing bothering me, very much indeed, and that one thing was her younger sister. My prospective sister-in-law was 20 years old, wore tight mini skirts and low-cut blouses. She would regularly bend down when near me, and I got many a pleasant view of her underwear. I had to be distracted. And yet I felt she was very deliberate. She never did it when she was near anyone else, just me. One day, little sister called and asked me to come over and check the wedding invitations. She was alone, and I arrived. She whispered to me that soon I was to be married, and she had feelings and desires for me, and she couldn't overcome, and didn't really want to overcome them. She told me that she wanted to make love to me just once before I got married and committed my life to her sister. I was in total shock. I couldn't say a word. She said, "I'm going upstairs to my bedroom, and if you want to go ahead and have just one event with me, come up and get me." I was stunned. I was frozen in shock as I watched her go up to the stairs. When she reached the top, she pulled down her panties and threw them down the stairs at me. I stood there for a moment, then turned and went straight out the front door. I opened the door and stepped out of the house and walked straight as fast as I could to my car. Whoa! My future father-in-law, her father, was standing outside. He came up to me, he grabbed me by the shoulder with tears in his eyes, and he hugged me and said, "We are so happy that you passed our little test. We couldn't ask for a better man for our daughter. Welcome to our family." The moral of the story? Always keep your condoms in the car. I'm Gary Null. Let's go over. Let's go over and say hello to Marty Feldman. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. I'm still laughing. I got to calm down. Give me a moment to. Give me a moment to calm down. Also, another comment. I was with you at the Saturday support group, and you're right. People were shocked by what you were doing. There was not a word about diet or supplements or anything. People leaving were shocked at the ideas, but I think you really got the idea across. The belief system is everything.
Good. Well, if we don't affect them at the belief system level, then they're not going to make any changes. And we've seen that in the past. And by the way, Marty, do you remember when I was doing all the research over at the Institute of Applied Biology?
Oh, yes. That was fun times.
Remember coming over at night and all the scientists, so many doctors and scientists would come at night and sit there because they weren't able to do that kind of research in their own labs.
They never saw so many rats walking around in no cages.
Marty, you're going to give us some insight into vitamin supplements in our heart.
Okay, here's the story. You alerted me on a recent program to a very interesting journal article, and I went online and I read the article in great detail, and here's some of the aspects of the article. They took 288 conventional cardiologists, just sort of at random, and they studied them in a few aspects. First, they asked them, what are the main dietary supplements that patients ask you about in your office? And the surprising result was 80% omega-3 fish oil questions, 58% coenzyme Q10 questions, 39% vitamin E questions. Great, great. Beyond all that, here's what came about. 69% of the cardiologists of that group agreed with this statement. Adults with a family history of heart disease should consider taking dietary supplements containing omega-3 fatty fish oils. Wonderful, wonderful. Most of these physicians said professional journals and clinical studies were the most trusted source of reliable information about dietary supplements. Most indicated that they had not received any formal education or training on the subject, dietary supplement, but expressed an interest in information about the products related to their specialty, cardiology in this case, basic facts about the supplements, potential interactions with pharmaceuticals, and how to counsel patients about supplements. This is wonderful. We are going to teach them. We are going to teach them online right here some of the aspects of holistic, as you mentioned, holistic cardiology. First, they need to learn a little bit more about the omega-3 fish oils, just to do that kind of briefly. We start a dose of EPA, which is an active component of the fish oil, starting about 1,000 milligrams a day for people in general. With heart problems in general, you have to go higher doses with some of these items. You have to go up maybe 1,500 a day for openers, EPA if you have heart problems. Digestive issues may be a problem with the fish oil. You have to get your enzymes in order, and some people need an emulsified type of fish oil that's easy to absorb. Now, if people are vegan, they don't want to take actually from fish. We have algae-based DHA. It's pure DHA. It's from algae, so there's no fish involved. And in that case, the DHA is very effective, especially beyond the heart, for the retina and the brain. And in those, we have to often go up to at least 1,300 a day if you have heart problems with the DHA. Calamari is a new one coming out now, fish oil, or omega-3, I should say, from calamari. And there's even prescription fish oil. Now, that's very expensive stuff, but the world is all mixed up, and although it's expensive, often insurance will pay because it is a prescription drug, but very similar to the basic stuff. Fish oil is very, very friendly in general. EPA, you can commonly go up, I've seen people on 2,000 a day for months at a time, not a problem at all. Coenzyme Q10 you discussed earlier in the program in depth. You were talking about 300 milligrams for regular people routinely, which I agree with you. When you have heart issues, you have to go higher. It depends on many factors. One factor would be if you're unfortunately on statin medication, then you're in real big coenzyme Q10 trouble. Unfortunately, the statin drugs deplete the liver and the system of important coenzyme Q10, and some people have muscle decay and severe illness relating to this depletion. They need a ton of coenzyme Q10. Vitamin E. Vitamin E, very, very effective stuff. The key there is the word mixed tocopherol. In general, we start with 400 units a day. For people who have heart troubles, they can go up to double that or even more. Very friendly in terms of dose. Now, we've got three other guys that are not part of those three that were mentioned earlier, which are holistic cardiology. The first would be magnesium. Citrate's an excellent form of magnesium. The key here is that people with heart problems tend to need a higher dose of the magnesium. You were talking before about 800 for openers for many people. I agree with you on that, and probably even higher depending on your heart status. And you can take a magnesium citrate pretty friendly. When you get up too high a dose, you will tend to get diarrhea. So you can back off the dose and then stop the diarrhea. It's similar to vitamin C bowel tolerance. There's a magnesium bowel tolerance, same concept. Now, also, sometimes magnesium with taurine is very, very good for the heart. And taurine might start at 400 a day routinely, but heart persons might go up to 800, even higher. Very friendly, minimal problems with that. Two more to go. L-carnitine, very important. Wonderful for the heart. Reduces angina. Many, many studies showing its value for heart patients. 200 milligrams for three times a day for openers. You may have to go higher. And last for right now, hawthorn herb has many different forms. I can't give a true dose because of that. Many studies show hawthorn, very nice, simple herb, dilutes the coronary arteries and diminishes angina in many, many studies. So we have holistic cardiology. And any cardiologists out there, they should listen to this program, and they will learn.
Marty Feldman, thank you very much. Martin Feldman can be reached in his office in New York at 212-744-4413. Well, that's our program today. I hope you've enjoyed it. Always nice to have you with us. I'm Gary Nall. But before you go anywhere, Michael Rupert's program right here on the Progressive Radio Network is next up. And let's go over and ask Mike what he's got on store for us tonight. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Gary. I was just coming back from my car. Never mind. Well, I don't know if you'd believe this or not, but according to the Tea Party, the Transition Movement and Post-Carbon Institute are part of UN Agenda 21, setting out to confiscate everybody's privately owned land. We're going to have a lot of fun things to talk about. The world is just absolutely going totally insane. And humor is really needed right now. I'm glad I heard that story.
Well, we look forward to listening to it. Well, thanks a lot. Back in a moment with Michael Rupert here on the Progressive Radio Network, the number one listened to radio station in the world for progressive minds.